Blog Talk Radio.
And at that moment, you'll notice you're not as dead as you thought you were. And you'll realize there's nothing more effective for breaking you free than philosophy in action. And when your intent and your actions are in alignment, you can finally stop pointing fingers at everyone and everything else and harness the power within and commence your empowered life with a mindset that screams, I'm free.
Hi, this is Byron Katie.
Hi, this is Dr. John Gray, author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus.
Hi, this is Greg Braden.
Hi, this is Joan Borisenko. I'm author of Your Soul's Compass.
Hi, this is Dan Millman, author of Way of the Peaceful Warrior.
Hi, this is James Redfield, author of The Celestine Prophecy. You've tuned in to a radio show that can truly change your life. It's time to break free from the prison of your negative thoughts and release your greatest self. You're listening to Empowered Living with Steve Marabowie.
A Better Today welcomes you to Empowered Living, Life, the Truth, and Being Free with host, speaker, writer, and personal coach, Steve Marabowie. In the next hour, Steve and his expert guests take you on a quest for truth and highlight philosophies and strategies that help you release your greatest self. It's time to focus on your potential instead of your limitations. Here's your host, Steve Marabowie.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. You're listening to Empowered Living, Life, the Truth, and Being Free. I'm your host, Steve Marabowie. As always, you are welcome to participate with this show no matter where you're listening, no matter how you're listening. You can participate through AOL Instant Messenger. The screen name is ABT Radio Show. You could write us in. Go to empoweredlivingradio.com. That's empoweredlivingradio.com. You could write in our instant feedback form. You could listen or participate in any way. If you don't get a chance to hear the live shows, you could always send us an email. We're a very user-friendly show. You could send us an email and participate with any upcoming author. We have some amazing guests coming up. You're listening to the most listened-to internet talk radio show in the USA. I know you may be listening on terrestrial stations around the country as well, but we are the most listened-to internet talk radio show in the USA. It's become a meeting place for today's great thinkers and communicators and some killer seminars, if I might add. Today, we have another amazing guest joining us shortly, Eric Maisel. He wrote a fantastic book called Brainstorm, Harnessing the Power of Productive Obsessions. We'll hear from Eric in a minute. First, I want to say hello to the A Better Today community. Keep doing what you're doing. Never forget the power of one. One kind gesture, one person at a time, one day at a time. That's it. That's all it takes. It doesn't have to be a huge project. One kind gesture, one person at a time, one day at a time. In this day and age, so many people are embracing their spirituality. I think it's a beautiful thing. But in doing so, don't turn your back on your humanity. There are people out there who need your love, your compassion, your touch. Get out there and participate. When Eric Maisel says something that empowers you, that inspires you, make sure you share it. You share it with someone else. You send someone else to his website. You empower somebody else with his work. Make sure that you do it. Participate, participate, participate. That's what it's all about, folks. I'm so honored to be the host of this show. I was looking at our YouTube. You know, people go to YouTube for all kinds of videos, and it could be silly videos, entertaining videos. But I thought when they told me, a couple of listeners told me, "Hey, Steve, throw some of your show archives on YouTube." And I said, "What? Nobody goes to YouTube to listen to a radio show. There's not a video. We're going to put up a slide of myself and the author, and that's it. And you're going to just have to sit there for 10-minute pieces. Nobody's going to do that. But I listen to what the fans say, so I threw up some shows, and boy, was I wrong. Boy, was I wrong. Can I tell you that our channel has nearly 100,000 views, and our videos, can you understand? Our videos are simply radio show audio. They are leaning on 3 million listens. 3 million people going to YouTube to listen to a radio show, and I'm telling you, we have never advertised this radio show. It is all from all of you passing along information. I'm going to ask you to do it again. When Eric Maisel says something that inspires you, that empowers you, that gets your creative juices flowing, I want you to not just keep it to yourself. Share it with someone else. We support authors like this, and we support shows like this. Let's participate. I want to get to the show. Excited to speak with Dr. Eric Maisel. He's an author, family therapist, and cultural observer. Is widely regarded as America's foremost creativity coach. He's written over 30 books, including including Coaching and the Artist Within, Creativity for Life, and his new book, Brainstorm, Harnessing the Power of Productive Obsessions. Excited to have him on. Eric Maisel, welcome to the program.
Hi, Steve. Great to be with you.
So you've written so many fantastic books. You're recognized as a foremost creativity coach. What gave birth to Brainstorm? What inspired you to write Brainstorm?
Well, I've been working with creative and performing artists for over 30 years now, and I've been trying to look at the real issues that confront artists, issues like creativity and depression, creativity and addiction, creativity and anxiety, all the real things we face. And I was seeing over time that what seemed to distinguish successful, effective, productive artists from less productive artists was that the effective ones could obsess about their work even if life wasn't going well. They had a way of making this pocket in their life or pocket in their mind, working on their work, on their novel or their painting, even if they had bills to pay or even if life wasn't perfect. Whereas other people more obsessed about unproductive things, they more worried about things. So I wanted to examine this distinction, this difference, see what was going on between the two groups. But also, I'm a trained therapist, and I know that about 120 years ago or so, one guy, one individual, defined all obsessions as negative things, as unwanted, intrusive thoughts. And ever since, in the clinical world, all obsessions have been looked at as negative. And that's filtered out into the culture, generally. Most people think of obsessions as negative things, whereas scientists and artists and business people have known for thousands of years that there are certainly productive obsessions. So I wanted to get the word back on the positive side of the ledger and let people understand that there certainly are excellent obsessions to create and nurture.
I love that, because really when you look through history, that the people who have changed the world, who have inspired us, Eric, the people whose work we see, these people were brilliantly obsessed, and we're reading about them and seeing them because they were obsessed and they were living their obsession.
Yeah, it's hard to get any real work done if you're not obsessed. Mere interest doesn't turn out to be enough motivational juice to get things done. Words like discipline really miss the boat. We want to love our work, we want to be devoted to our work, and we want to turn our brains over to our work so that we have more rather than fewer neurons working on the work. So absolutely, historically, our writers, painters, scientists have obsessed about their work, and that's the only reason that the work got done.
I agree. Dr. King, who I love his work, not only the popular ones, but the ones that don't get as much notoriety, Dr. King described his obsession as dangerous unselfishness, and he lived it. And you're absolutely right. As I get more and more and delve more and more into the social structure and the forensic of success and change, you realize that the people who are really driving it are exactly what you said, living their obsession. And it is, in fact, hard to get anything done without being obsessed, because you'll be convinced out of it. If you were just interested, you'd be convinced out of it too quickly. Obsessions don't go away. What we need to do, Eric, is harness the power of a productive obsession.
Yeah, and to piggyback on what you're saying, it's not just that these are hard to create or that people will talk us out of it. It's that we are so busy with small thoughts all day long, not just negative thoughts, but just small thoughts like I need to pick up the kids at 3 and what's for dinner, just one thought like that after another. And every thought grabs neurons, steals neurons. That's what a thought is. It's neurons gathering. And even if a given thought only grabs 100 million neurons, that's a lot of neurons. and we only have several billion available to us. So what happens on a daily basis, and this is what most people's experience of life is, we have one small thought after another. We manage to get things done off our to-do list, but we have the experience of going through the motions, like we never really are biting into anything. We're really never delving into anything. So one of the tasks to create and nurture a productive obsession is to let go of the thoughts that don't serve you, do a better job of, you know, as the phrase goes, not sweating the small stuff, because every small thought is going to steal neurons, and then they're not available for the big thought.
I love that. So for so many people, and you're absolutely right, Eric, there's a lot of people, and I'm sure you've encountered them throughout your years of coaching, that they confuse busyness with progress, right? Motion with progress, and you do get caught up in that small stuff and the busy nothingness that tends to cloud your day. So yeah, so how does someone listening in their cubicle, in their car, wherever they are, how do they take this information, this obsession, their goals, their intent, their destination, how do they make a productive map and stick to it?
Well, let's start with the necessity of quieting the small thoughts, because you can't get the big thoughts up if you really are involved with small thoughts all day long. So cognitive therapists teach a pretty darn smart three-step process for quieting and extinguishing the talk that we don't want. And the first step is to just notice what you're saying to yourself, which is an act of courage, because we're very defensive, tricky creatures, this species of ours. And so we're saying things to ourselves to fool ourselves. Let's say we have a novel that we kind of want to work on, but we also don't want to work on because it's hard to do. Well, the kind of characteristic thing that people are saying to themselves nowadays is, I'm too busy and I'm too tired. And because those have a ton of grains of truth in them, we do get tired and we are very busy, we allow ourselves to get off the hook by saying that sort of thing. So the first step is to notice how we're using language internally to get ourselves off the hook. And then the second step is to dispute those utterances that don't serve us. And a lot of our utterances don't serve us. So in this example, instead of allowing the I'm too tired to just sit there, what you would say is, I'm very tired, but, and that's a way big but, big B-U-T, I am tired, but I'm not too tired to spend 15 minutes on my novel. So it's you fighting with yourself, so to speak, arm wrestling with yourself, to not allow your own trickiness, your own defensiveness, to stop you from getting your work done. And then the third step of this process is to substitute more affirmative language, to start talking to yourself in ways that encourage you to get your work done rather than discouraging you from getting your work done. So just to run back over that really quickly, the way to get rid of thoughts that don't serve you, first, or to hear them, second, to dispute them, and third, to substitute more affirmative language. That would be really step one in this process of allowing productive obsessions to well up.
And recognizing, too, that it's the thoughts that don't serve you are the ones that got you to where you're at now. It is those thoughts that bring you to the level of frustration you are and inactivity that you're at now. So that's a great realization to recognize. If I keep doing what I'm doing, I'm going to keep getting what I'm getting, and I need to take notice of these thoughts that are stealing my neurons.
And we're pretty tired of our own self-talk often. We know that we're doing something that we wish we weren't doing. We know we're not really making ourselves proud by our inner self-talk. But what we don't quite realize is we don't really get the Buddhist phrase about get a grip on your mind. We think our thoughts think us rather than that we can think them. And I think we can do a much better job of deciding what to think about than we currently do, rather than just going with the flow of our inner talk and having the same old things come up again and again.
And it's a beautiful thing about humanity and the human truth is that instead of beating yourself up, instead of, you know, feeling down about what you haven't done, the good news is today is a new day, and you're able to take those steps today. You're able to take control of your thoughts and really pay attention to what you're doing today.
Absolutely. And one of the great discoveries of the recent decade is that we have more brain plasticity than we thought. Because there was a view not so many years ago that the brain got pruned in a certain way early on in life, and we were kind of stuck thinking the same thoughts forever. and that ideas like growth and change weren't maybe real ideas, that they were more romantic illusions. But we are beginning to see that the brain has far more plasticity than we thought. It has the ability to change itself. It has the ability for neurons to not always grip in the same way and have us go down the same channels and canals with our thoughts. So that's actually big, encouraging news. And irrespective of your age, you can change how you're thinking and what you're thinking and really change your life.
So it's really not burnt bridges like we used to think?
That's right.
Powerful stuff, folks. We're having a conversation with Dr. Eric Maisel. He's the author of numerous books. Today we're talking about Brainstorm, Harnessing the Power of Productive Obsessions. I want you to check out his website, ericmaisel.com. That's ericmaisel.com. If you're listening through our website, you can just click on Eric's name. It'll go right to his website. It doesn't interfere with the show at all, so you can browse around Eric's site while you listen to this brilliant man speak. Eric, throughout your coaching career, is it mostly just helping people get out of their own way?
Oh, that's an awfully big part of it. People are in their own way, but it's also making lots of useful suggestions. I mean, coaching is about support, as you know, but it's also about accountability, and it's helping people change the way they operate in a daily way. To give you one concrete example, I try to sell every one of my creativity coaching clients on the idea of instituting a creativity practice in the morning, whether they're night people or whatever arguments they want to give me. I still try to explain to them that this early morning practice is probably the best tactical or strategic change to make in their lives, that they start doing their creative work in that 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. period rather than trying to wait to the end of the day when they really have no neurons or energy left. And I explain it in the following way. A, of course, if you do your creative work every day, first thing each morning, you'll get a lot of work done. That's the major obvious benefit. The second benefit is that you'll get to make use of your great sleep thinking, the thinking you've been doing through the night, the thinking that vanishes as soon as you turn to the day and start to make decisions about the day, whether you're going to have a bran flakes or a bagel or whatever. When you make those decisions, your sleep thinking goes away. And if you turn directly to your work, you can process and access your sleep thinking. That's an excellent second reason to have a morning practice. And the third reason is the most important one of all, and that is if you get some work done on your productive obsession, on your novel, on your painting, first thing, you'll have the experience of having made some meaning on that day. And the rest of the day can be half meaningless and you won't get depressed. And that's a really big point because a lot of people are living with this low-grade case of the blues, existential blues, not sure if they matter or their efforts matter. So to make this long story short, that's the kind of practical suggestion that I make to clients that they really have not thought about before and certainly not thought about in that much detail, that something like instituting a morning creativity practice can change their creative life radically.
We have some great feedback coming in. Feedback today, well, Instant Messenger, the screen name is ABT Radio Show, or you could feedback through our website, empoweredlivingradio.com. We're speaking with Eric Maisel. He is the author of Brainstorm, Harnessing the Power of Productive Obsessions. Let's go with Jennifer. Jennifer's in Cleveland, Ohio, and she writes, Steve, excellent guest today. Wow, obsessions. I wish this was a five-hour show. But to make it brief, how can I tell the difference between a productive or destructive obsession?
Great question, obviously. And the too short answer is it's really hard because even our productive obsessions lead us into hard work, and then we start to unproductively obsess about how hard the work is. So this is really complicated territory. But let me give you a headline distinction. The headline distinction is that unproductive obsessions arise from anxiety. That's where they come from, and we're quite an anxious species. We worry about a lot of things, obviously, survival needs, but also all kinds of modern anxieties that, you know, didn't exist before, all the things we're worrying about. And that's where the unproductive obsessions arise from. Productive obsessions arise from our meaning-making needs. They arise from our places of interest and curiosity and passion and love and meaning. So insofar as we are getting a good grip on our mind and can distinguish between something that's arising from anxiety and something that's arising from passion, then we can understand better what are the unproductive obsessions and which are the productive obsessions.
So it's a matter of how it makes you feel as well?
Not so much feel, because you can feel actually rotten with your productive obsession because it's such hard work. So it's not so much the feeling, it's identifying the source, the reason that you're obsessing at all. And if you identify the source of your, you know, hand washing all day long as anxiety, then you know that's not a great obsession. That's one of those that you want to extinguish. But if you recognize as the source of your obsession that you really want to solve a problem in the world, or that you really want to get your novel written, you have a passion for your novel, that's a productive obsession. So it's being in better touch with the source of the obsession that allows you to distinguish whether it's an unproductive one or a productive one.
Folks, we're speaking with Dr. Eric Maisel. He's the author of Brainstorm, Harnessing the Power of Productive Obsessions. We're going to take a quick break. While we're on break, I want you to check out ericmaisel.com. That's ericmaisel.com. You're listening to Empowered Living, Life, the Truth, and Being Free. I'm your host, Steve Maraboli. We'll be right back.
A renowned speaker, author, and personal coach, Steve Maraboli has risen to international prominence by delivering highly penetrating speeches and effective programs that have helped propel corporations, executives, professionals, and organizations to great levels of success and excellence. Packed with timeless wisdom and effective strategies, Steve's speeches and coaching programs have been featured in Fortune Magazine, Reader's Digest, New York Times, LA Times, and Psychology Today. Steve Maraboli has been considered the secret weapon behind many great success stories. Now it's your turn. Visit stevemaraboli.com. Align with success and excellence today. stevemaraboli.com.
Hi, this is Mark Anthony Farag, recording artist, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Music is one of the most important things in my life, but nothing is more important than life itself. So choose a designated driver. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
How I long to hear you sing beneath the clear blue sky.
Hi, this is Steve Maraboli. Do you need a little motivation, a little inspiration? I'd like to share with you my favorite website, motivateus.com. I have been visiting the site for many years whenever I need a motivational or inspirational pick-me-up. MotivateUs.com is packed with thousands of positive quotes, stories, and poems. For over 10 years, Marlene Blasek has been regularly updating the site with submissions from listeners just like you. Visitors are invited to share their best thoughts and stories to help encourage others. Why not visit the site and see for yourself? That's MotivateUs.com. And tell Marlene Steve sent you.
I'm Sarah Evans with a message from the American Red Cross. Did you know that the Red Cross provides service to members of the military, veterans, and their families? From communicating emergency messages in times of crisis, to outreach to the National Guard and Reserve, to veterans assistance and military hospital visits, the Red Cross is there for men and women in the armed forces across the country and around the world. Visit www.redcross.org or contact your local American Red Cross chapter.
Ready to participate in an effective advertising campaign? Internet radio continues to gain popularity as its audience has grown larger than many terrestrial radio programs. It's the perfect platform to reach your target audience. Empowered Living with Steve Maraboli is heard live by thousands of people all across the nation and downloaded on iTunes by thousands more. If you would like to support this program and advertise to our large national audience, please call A Better Today at 800-445-0921. That's 800-445-0921.
This is Dominique Ruiz, author of The Four Agreements, speaking for Empowered Living with Steve Maraboli.
Back. You're listening to Empowered Living, Life, the Truth, and Being Free. I'm your host, Steve Maraboli. For more information about A Better Today, our speeches, our programs, our seminars, our live events schedule, make sure you check out abettertoday.com. Make sure you check out empoweredlivingradio.com to download every single show we have ever done, ever 100% free. You can check it out at empoweredlivingradio.com. And, of course, for all the corporate brilliance, you can go to stevemaraboli.com. We're having a great conversation with Dr. Eric Maisel. He is the author of Brainstorm, Harnessing the Power of Productive Obsession. His website is ericmaisel.com. That's ericmaisel.com. Keep the feedback coming. Keep it coming. And we're going to actually go to some now. Here is Peter. Peter's in Northridge, New Jersey. He writes, Steve, excellent show today. I was curious if you could ask your guest how I can know whether my goal is worth it or not, or if I'm just chasing a dream.
Well, the short answer is there are no guarantees, and we want life to come with guarantees. I think that's one of our trouble areas, is that we don't want to launch into things without having some certainty that it's going to work, and we can't have that certainty. So we have to let go of that. That's the main thing. But then the next thing is you want to give it some time. Let's say that you have maybe generated your list of possible productive obsessions, namely things that interest you. You sat down and tried to remind yourself of the things you love, and then you pick something off that list and say to yourself, okay, I'm going to try to obsess about this for a little while. The main thing there is to give it a month. I think that's a good, smart number. Because if you only give it a day, you might find that on day two, you're a little upset because the work is slogging along already. You hoped you would work on this novel, but you're already not sure what it's about, etc. And too often people will throw their obsession aside in the first hour or the first day. You want to give your obsession a chance. That's really the only way to know if it is going to be something worth continuing or not. You can't decide it beforehand. You can't wait until you really know if it's a good obsession. You want to choose it, commit to it, get to know it, spend some time with it, and only then will you know if you've made the right choice.
Thanks for listening, Peter. Keep going on. You know, I have a question for you. A lot of people do get caught up in this self-sabotage. You mentioned in response to Peter's question about not getting caught up too much into the details on it, what we're really talking about is, and something we need to address, is a lot of people, Eric, have an unhealthy attachment to outcome. And it's an imagined outcome because it hasn't happened yet. And they have an unhealthy attachment to this outcome. How do they break free from that?
It's an intricate dance because you want to attach and you want to detach. You want to know how to do both. You know, if you know your Taoism, you know that the ideas of yin-yang are not about being masculine or feminine, but rather having all of those qualities available to you, all masculine and feminine qualities available to you, and then choosing which ones you want to manifest in this moment. And it's the same with attachment and detachment. You don't want to be a, you know, kind of, so to speak, perfect Buddhist who's great at detaching and not have good attachment energy, because attachment is important too. Attachment means that we're giving it our all, that we have ambitions, that we have dreams, that we're living our life to the fullest. So attaching is good. Simultaneously, we have to detach and recognize that the thing in front of us may not work, and we're not going to throw good money after bad if it's not working after a month. We have to give things a try, appropriately attach, and appropriately detach simultaneously. And just to piggyback on this idea, pundits who claim to know will say that Beethoven's 1st, 3rd, 5th, 7th, and 9th symphonies are better than his 2nd, 4th, 6th, and 8th, and I have no idea if that's true. But what I know is you can't do 9 without 8, you can't do 8 without 7, you can't do 7 without 6. You can't skip the things that don't work. And that's what everybody in their heart of hearts wants. They want to skip the things that don't work. And that's not honoring process. Attempting to skip the things that don't work doesn't honor process. We have to show up, commit, try it, and then see where we are.
Huh, that's interesting that you mentioned that. I was on a phone call earlier with our good friend, a friend of the show, Christine Carlson, wife, of course, of the of Dr. Richard Carlson, who had passed away, and we mentioned earlier about sweating the small stuff. A lot of people don't realize that Don't Sweat the Small Stuff was Dr. Richard Carlson's 10th book. You know, he had nine that you know, he put out there, and it was just crickets. You know, nobody picked it up. But he wrote that 10th book, and he's known for that Don't Sweat the Small Stuff book. But like you're saying, you can't get number 10 without going 1 through 9, and you have to honor
that's
the
exactly
process.
That's exactly right. I tell my clients what you're saying all the time, that when you hear about a bestseller and it's supposedly the person's first book, it's their first published book. You can bet the house that they have three unpublished manuscripts somewhere floating around their house, because that's process. Almost everybody's first novel is pretty wretched, and then the second novel gets better, etc. And if you stop after the first novel because you look at it and you say, boy, that was pretty wretched, you're not understanding process. You're not understanding that it was, so to speak, supposed to be wretched, that you were just learning how to write a novel. How great should it have supposed to be? So I'm entirely agreeing with what you're saying, that, and we just often only hear about successes. You know, we're a success-driven culture with, you know, bestseller lists and top 10 lists and all of that. And people, therefore, are kind of loath to talk about their failures because it makes them sound like they're not as good or perfect as the next person. But if any artist or creative person or anybody in business was genuinely truthful, they'd tell you about all the mistakes and messes they've made along with the excellent work they've done.
I love it. It's absolutely right. James Redfield, another example of Celestine Prophecy. That book was around for years where he was literally, Eric, selling it out of the trunk of his car, you know,
yep.
And then somebody picked it up, and it became, you know, he was the in the 90s, he was the most popular, the best-selling hardcover author in the world, but before that,
mm-hmm.
he was selling it out of the trunk of his car. You're absolutely right. I love that we brought this up. Folks, keep the feedback coming. We're having a great conversation with Dr. Eric Maisel. He is the author of Brainstorm, Harnessing the Power of Productive Obsessions. He's the author of over 30 books, so make sure you check out ericmaisel.com. That's ericmaisel.com. We can go with Sonia. Sonia's in Langley, Virginia, and she writes, Steve, excellent show. I've been a listener for over 2 years, and I'm in love with this show and everyone that you speak with. Thank you for spreading the truth. I was curious if you could ask your guest how I can help my daughter continue on her productive obsessions. She's 7 years old and so much more talented and gifted than I was when I was 7. I don't want to get in her way. I want to help her as much as possible. Can you please give me some info? Thank you in advance.
Great question, and it's great that she's thinking about it in those terms, because most parents, naturally enough, are thinking how their kids can fit in and get ahead and get grades and make it to the right college and all of that. And all of that shrinks the mind, unfortunately. The more that you fill your mind with facts and dates and the other things necessary to do well on tests, the fewer neurons you have left to have these productive obsessions. So I would say that the headline answer there is to invite your child to think about big things, especially in the summer, because maybe during the school year they don't have any time to think about big things. It may be the case that during the school year they really do just have to get their homework done. But summer is a wonderful time for inviting your child, whatever age, to have some big thoughts. And just to give you one example from my own life, my wife was working and I was in school getting some degree, and our two daughters were young. They were maybe 4 and 6 years old. And my mom, who was in her 70s at that point, was watching them on a daily basis. And she would play a kind of version of People's Court with them. It would always be little Johnny, the bad boy, had done something. And she would lay out the offense, so to speak, and she would have them try to think through, like, what's a just punishment for little Johnny. And kids love that, to be asked to think in a sophisticated, subtle way about, is this too much punishment? Is this the right amount of punishment? What kind of offense is this? As a parent, you could create very interesting games to play with your children that would allow them to think big rather than think small. They do plenty of small thinking in school. It would be lovely if they could do bigger thinking at home.
I absolutely love that. What a great idea. And thank you, Sonia, for writing in. I'm really, really enjoying this conversation because you said it at the beginning. You know, this obsessive thing kind of gets a negative connotation, but it is absolutely essential to launch you. For most people, it is your obsession, your love, your gift, your calling. You know, it is absolutely essential to get you to where you want to be. And we should honor that, right, Eric?
We should honor it. And then, of course, to piggyback on that thought, we have to be careful with it, of course. Because historically, we know that our great artists, writers, scientists, they often did a wonderful job of obsessing, but then they forgot their kids' names and where they lived. And they went overboard, naturally, because the obsession so interested them that the rest of life was kind of pale by comparison. Well, we don't want to do that. We don't want to just have these wonderful obsessions and forget about the rest of life and our responsibilities and what have you. So we want to do a better job of kind of binding the obsession to a certain amount of time during the day. And to return to the idea I mentioned before about a morning creativity practice, it can be excellent to keep your obsession to just the first couple of hours of the day, let's say it's your novel, to work on your novel intensely, passionately, with obsessive energy for just few hours, and a few hours is a lot of time if you're really doing good work, and then shut it down and say to yourself quite mindfully, okay, that was wonderful. Now I've got to return to the rest of life with all of its nonsense and what have you. I've got to return because I have responsibilities and duties and what have you. And by talking to yourself that way, you can do really a brilliant job of nurturing the obsession, keeping it alive day in and day out, while also attending to the rest of life and not making the mistake of not attending to your responsibilities.
That's really fantastic. Let's go with Rita. Rita's in Wyoming, and she writes, Steve, excellent show today. Could you please ask if it's really possible, maybe I'm a skeptic, but is it really possible to prevent negative thoughts from interfering with my life?
No, of course. Of course it's not. But I think prevent is, the way it's phrased, one has to say no to it.
Right.
But one could say it differently. Rather than prevent, you know, can you minimize it? Can you minimize self-talk? Absolutely. Can you extinguish certain threads of self-talk? Absolutely. You can't prevent all self-talk. And it's interesting, existentially speaking, that when something matters more than something else, then more anxiety and negative self-talk wells up. Just to give you a simple example, you know, if you're a novelist who has a day job, an important day job, you may be experiencing no anxiety in your day job spending your company's $30 million budget or something because it ain't your money. It really doesn't matter to you in a certain sense. Of course it matters, but in another sense it doesn't matter. But if you have your first conversation with a literary agent or an editor about your novel, you may discover all of this anxiety. You may have a panic attack because this matters to you so much more than your day job does. So in this sense, we can always be surprised by a new wave of negative self-talk. So you can't prevent it, because the more you stretch, the more you go into new territory, and when you're in new territory, that can be scary, and new negative self-talk can show up. So the goal is not to try to prevent it. The goal is to know what to do when it arises. And the what to do is what I said earlier. Hear it. Go, oh, wow, I just said that thing to myself. I must be really anxious. Dispute it. Say, no, that, I don't want this thought. And then substitute more affirmative language, which might sound like, I actually want this meeting with the literary agent. This is something I want, and I'm going to do an excellent job of chatting with her. So just to say that whole thing again really fast, we can't prevent negative self-talk, but we can minimize it, and we can extinguish some of it.
And you're absolutely right. And what you said it brilliantly. We're speaking with Eric Maisel. He is the author of Brainstorm, Harnessing the Power of Productive Obsession, ericmaisel.com. That's ericmaisel.com. Or click on Eric's name on our website. It'll take you right there. You said it brilliantly, Eric. You know, and as you cut some off and you evolve and you go to a different level, you're going to have a whole new breed of thoughts. Eric, we know this very well. New levels brings new devils. We know this. So what we can do is protect ourselves from the effect these negative thoughts have. It's similar to having a pain-in-the-butt neighbor. You're almost always going to have a pain-in-the-butt neighbor, but whether you let what they say or do ruin your whole day, that's the option you have. This is a very empowering way to look at your thoughts and look at who controls your thoughts and your reactions to them.
That's exactly right, and we're both saying the same thing, which is the idea of being more mindful is not about having, you know, a sitting meditation practice where you sit for an hour and then you get up and you're thinking the same old thoughts 1 minute later and you haven't really changed. I think mindfulness for me is not something like sitting meditation. It's actually noticing all day long the sorts of things that you say and learning how to extinguish, deal with those thoughts that don't serve you, and ultimately how to do the best job possible of getting out of your own way.
I love it. Let's keep the feedback coming. Let's go with, who do we got? Miss Gonzalez in Puerto Rico. She writes, "Steve, hello, I'm a former New Yorker. I'm sending you lots of love from Puerto Rico. Please ask about how to deal with fear. I don't know that, I'm sure I know what my obsession is. I'm just afraid. Maybe they call it fear of success. I don't know what it is, but I have a lot of fear of going for things. How do I control that fear, or do I just close my eyes, set a plan, and go?"
Well, that's not a bad idea. But I would reframe fear as anxiety, because that allows us to talk about anxiety management tools. And I think it is anxiety and not fear. Fear is more properly a word about, you know, tigers charging. And anxiety is this systemic building up in us of contemporary worry. So I think it's more anxiety. So the answer is, have some anxiety management tools that actually work for you. You know, people have read, you know, a million books about stress and anxiety, and yet typically they don't own one or two or three or four strategies that actually work for them to reduce their experience of anxiety. And there are only about a dozen that work. It's not like there are a million to learn. There are only about a dozen that work.
Watch TV all day, and the TV will tell you, there's no strategies. Eric, they just pop this pill. There's no strategies.
Exactly.
Necessary.
Well, that's another conversation, but that's absolutely right. Nobody's helping us understand these strategies. But some of the strategies are simple ones, age-old ones like deep breathing. Deep breathing actually works to reduce your experience of anxiety. The cognitive work we're talking about reduces your experience of anxiety. Simple relaxation techniques like rubbing your shoulders. Discharge techniques. Actors learn these techniques all the time. Things like silent screaming. You can't actually scream because the police will come, but you make this big silent scream and it releases the stress and anxiety from your body. So we could go on about these stress management tools, these anxiety management tools. The headline is, get one that works for yourself. And then when you're experiencing this thing that your listener wrote in about, her fear, you actually reframe it from fear to anxiety. You say, wow, my obsession is making me a little bit anxious, but I know this great anxiety management tool. I use it all the time. It works for me. I'm going to try it right now. And then you use your anxiety management tool. The anxiety abates, and then you can get on with your obsession.
I love it. Let's keep the feedback coming. We're speaking with Eric Maisel. He's the author of Brainstorm, Harnessing the Power of Productive Obsessions. Make sure you check out ericmaisel.com. That's ericmaisel.com. I saw a good one. It was in Colorado. Colorado. Was it Janet? Yes, it was Janet in Colorado. She writes, "Steve, thank you so much. I love creativity shows. How do I get out of writer's block? What is writer's block? Please help me. I could sit and be obsessed for hours but not get anything. Please help me break out of this writer's block. Thank you."
A short answer for writer's block. Well, I think the main thing is to distinguish between writer's block. Blocks are usually about something fairly large, something like maybe the terrible comment your third grade teacher made to you about your little poem that you turned in, and how that's still lingering with you. So there's often some real work to be done around writer's block because it has some historical roots. But that needs to be distinguished from everyday resistance. That's a different idea, and that's one that creative people tend not to understand, the idea that we are always at some distance from our work, that there's some thin but very strong sheet of something between us and our work. And that's what we're actually experiencing most of the time. It's not writer's block. It's this everyday resistance to cracking through and beginning. So what I have clients do, and a lot of them hate this when I first say it because you'll hear why, because it involves wasting something, and people don't want to waste anything. But I have them bring an egg and a bowl and a spoon to their computer area, and crack an egg, drop it into their bowl. That experience of cracking a raw egg is the closest I've come in my decades of work in this area to having people experience the visceral sensation of cracking through and getting to the other side. Hmm. And then they discover if they crack this egg, something cracks and it allows them to start writing. And now they have this egg in the bowl beside them with a spoon, and it serves a second purpose because one of the great difficulties of the creative life is getting started, just as the listener said, getting started. But the other is staying put for a long period of time. Most people can get into the trance of working, work for 20 minutes, come out of the trance because maybe a truck rumbles by, and then they want to get up and go because they don't want to have to go back inside to the unknown again. So they get only one short stint of creativity done rather than some several long stints of creativity. Well, to deal with this issue of getting up too soon, you've now got your egg and your bowl and your spoon. If you just stir that raw egg for a few seconds, if you just sit there stirring it, your anxiety subsides, and you can get a whole nother creativity session going that you would not have had going if you'd let that little tendril of anxiety send you running. So I guess that's my kind of headline information on what to do about writer's block. First, don't call it writer's block. Call it everyday resistance. And then figure out what works for you to crack through that everyday resistance.
Oh, that's fantastic. Let's go with, Monica. Monica's in Toronto, Canada. She writes, Steve, could you please ask how to overcome negativity from family members? I am an aspiring artist, and while I'm getting into it later in life than I would think the quote-unquote rules are, my family members tell me I'm crazy, although they admit I am talented. How do I get rid of their negative emotions and just follow my own dreams? I know it's easy to say don't pay attention, but I have to pay attention. It's my family. How do I break free from that?
Spend less time with them because they're not going to change. They're going to have their repeated rap, just as the listener knows. They're going to say the same thing over and over again. And depending where they're coming from, they may say it even if you get successful. They may find something, because there are all kinds of agendas in life, and there may be lots of envy going on here that you're getting to try to live a certain kind of life that maybe they dreamed of living. And so there may be lots of things going on, you know, under the surface.
There's
the main thing
so
is
nothing so unpopular
to,
as positive change amongst friends. This really isn't for that thing.
Absolutely. I mean, we all know that we're going to talk a good game about wanting our friends to succeed, but envy is one of the giant issues among creative people because, you know, the pie is finite, and it is a Darwinian world. It is a matter of supply and demand. We all know that. We know that if somebody's getting X, well, we're not getting X, and there isn't so much X to go around. So there are a lot of unfortunate but natural emotions circulating among artists that make it very difficult for them to get along. This is not on the point of the listener's call, but just pops into my head. Artists often want community. They really want to be closer to their fellow artists. And one wonderful example is when Van Gogh went to the south of France and began his famous painting period, his most productive painting period in Provence. And as everyone knows, he had virtually no money, but he had enough money to do the following really odd thing. The first thing he did when he came to France was to buy 8 chairs because he thought he would start a salon, because he really wanted community. And if there was anybody less capable of having community than Van Gogh, it's really hard to imagine. So he's a perfect example of somebody who had these mixed feelings in his being of really wanting to have decent, good, intimate relationships with artists to the extent of spending all of his money on chairs, but actually having grave difficulties in dealing with anybody else. I think that wasn't on point, but I think I'll put a period there.
That's a great. It is a great point, and I'll tell you, we're getting so much fantastic feedback from everybody. We're speaking with Eric Maisel. He's the author of Brainstorm, Harnessing the Power of Productive Obsessions. Folks, we're just touching the surface of the brilliance in this book. I want you to check out his website. I want you to check out ericmazel.com. That's ericmazel.com. I'll probably get one or two more feedbacks in, but don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Plenty of information on there at Eric's website. You could also check out the book's website, which is brainstormthebook.com, if you'd like as well. Eric Mazel is a psychotherapist and author of many books, and, of course, he's recognized as one of the great coaches for as far as creativity goes. So make sure you check out ericmazel.com. Eric, I'm getting a lot of feedback just in general about creativity and cultivating creativity and
yep.
and being inspired and creative. Could you just talk towards that?
Well, I mean, of course, it's a big subject, but let me talk about it in a couple of ways. One is I think that creative people maybe are born slightly different with bigger appetites. The issue of appetites isn't widely spoken about, but I think it's a big issue. And it's why we have so many addiction problems among artists, because if you are born with a larger than usual appetite, on the one hand, that's going to be great because you're going to be hungry to write your novel and hungry to do your painting. But like Orson Welles, you're going to be hungry to eat a million peanuts also. So that's something to watch out for in the creative life, is that the natural, wonderful, large appetites that creative people have can also display themselves in unhealthy and addictive patterns. So that would be one point. The idea of appetites and increasing your appetite and letting yourself be as appetitive as you want to be, that's one idea. The next idea is the idea of conformity versus individualism. I think some people come out of the womb stubbornly individual, and by the age of 5 or 6, they're looking around themselves going, what are these adults doing? I don't understand why we have to sit around the dinner table and have this boring conversation and all of this. They already want to go their own way, and that's a problem because that means that early on they've decided that they have to make meaning for themselves rather than accept the received wisdom, the received meaning of their culture. And they're going to have a lifetime of challenges around making meaning, because there are going to be many moments, many days, where they feel like there is no meaning in their life. And that's because the bar is set very high, and there isn't any meaning unless they create it on that day. So there are all kinds of existential difficulties connected with the creative journey. So just to stay with, well, maybe a third point, and that is, when you decide that you're going to make personal meaning, you will notice that the world is not set up to meet you halfway. The world is a conservative place with a small c. All of these institutions are in place. Everybody else has their own agenda. And so what happens is that the creative person early on in life starts to become oppositional, because all she's doing is trying to fight for her own meaning, but she has to rub up against and push up against people who are doing other things. And so these three ideas of appetite and individuality and oppositional nature, you start to begin to get a picture of the creative personality and what challenges are naturally going to arise in that personality.
I love it. Folks, we can never have enough time with such brilliant people. We just had a great conversation with Eric Mazel. He is the author of Brainstorm, Harnessing the Power of Productive Obsessions. Brainstorm, Harnessing the Power of Productive Obsessions. I want you to check out ericmazel.com. That's ericmazel.com. Eric, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you so much for participating and sharing with our listeners. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve. It's been my great pleasure.
Folks, again, I want you to check out ericmazel.com. That's ericmazel.com. The name of the book is Brainstorm, Harnessing the Power of Productive Obsessions. That's Harnessing the Power of Productive Obsessions. Don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. The show's not over. The show's not over. We got a few minutes left, but since we're not having the second hour today, no second hour today, but I wanted to take a couple of minutes to speak with all of you about what we're talking about harnessing the power of productive obsessions. I want to talk to you about your obsessions, what your purpose is. Don't let anybody tell you it's not good enough. Don't let anyone tell you it's not important enough. It's you. How could what makes you breathe and what ignites that fire within, how could that not be important enough? It's important to you. I want you to be loyal to it. I want you to be loyal to it. I know here in the United States, I know a lot of you are listening overseas, but there's a whole bunch listening in the United States, and I want you to know that we can smell the barbecue as we head towards our Independence Day weekend. You can smell the barbecue. You can see the flags going everywhere. You could see them waving as we talk about independence and freedom, and those words get thrown around in this country like I've never seen before. But I want them to be thrown around not just out of your mouth. I want this couple of days, this next few weeks, this next few years, for the rest of your life, I want those words thrown around within your mind, within your body. I want those words to jump from cell to cell. Freedom, independence. I want a revolution. I want your independence. You're waving a flag. I want you to wave your own flag. This goes for everybody all across the world. It doesn't matter what country you're in or what your political status is. I want your cells speaking to each other. You want your cells to be whispering to each other that we're not taking this oppression anymore. I want your cells to speak to each other and say, we're not taking this dilution anymore. We are so much stronger than we've been giving ourselves credit for. We've been listening to other people who've been telling us we're not good enough. We've been listening to them for too long. This is our independence. We want our freedom. We want to be able to stand up and say, this is what we want, and make a plan and go towards it. I want you to run for your independence. I want you to celebrate your independence. The world around you, people around you at work, they don't have to know anything. This all happens within your own mind, within your own cells, within your own body. The people at work don't have to notice anything. You don't have to ask for permission. You don't have to get a doctor's note. You don't need any of that to just stand up for yourself and say, listen, I'm free. I'm free of the burden of what you used to tell me. I'm free of the burden of how you used to abuse me. I'm free of the burden how you used to tell me I'm not good enough. I am good enough. The fact that I woke up this morning to this beautiful day just as you did shows me I'm good enough. The fact that if I stand next to anybody in the world, the sun shines on me just as easily as it shines on everybody else. That means I'm as good as everybody else. That means I can do it. I want you to celebrate your freedom. I want you to celebrate your independence. I want you to have whispers at a cellular level about obsessions and what you want and what you're going to get. I want you to stand by and watch everybody succeed no longer. I want you to not just be a cheerleader of someone else's success. I want you to be the pioneer of your own success. I want you to stand up and start making motions. Say, what do I want? I've been bitching and complaining for years about what I don't want. This is the weekend. This is the day I start telling you what I do want. That person who used to complain about what I don't want is gone. This is a person that's going to tell you what I do want. And when I keep going, I'm going to stop telling you with my words what I do want. I'm just going to show you with my actions what I do want. Let this Independence Day, let this time of freedom and revolution, let this be a time for you that you wave your flag, that you make your plans, that you make your map, and that you follow it, independent of anyone else's opinion, independent of the same bullshit limiting beliefs you had told yourself for years. Let all those beliefs be dead. Let those beliefs fly away with the little firework rockets that you'll light off. As it shoots away, let those old beliefs go with it. With every bit of firecracker, imagine a bad habit going to death. With every little explosion, imagine yourself rising up and celebrating not only something that everyone else is celebrating. They won't even know that they're actually celebrating your independence. They won't even know that those beautiful glimmering lights in the sky and fireworks are a salute to you and your independence, that you are free of the old oppressive thoughts, and that you have realized that today is a new day. That today is a new day. You can't could have done something. You can't should have done something. But the beautiful thing is you can do something. And if you want something you've never had, you have the opportunity to do something you've never done. And you can do that today because today is a new day. Today greets you with the same opportunity it greets everybody else. The difference is most of them won't take it, but you will. You'll take it. You'll take it today because you know that today's the day you can do it. And never forget, this New Yorker loves you and supports you. You're listening to Empowered Living, Life, the Truth, and Being Free. I'm your host, Steve Maraboli. Now go do something. Check out our websites, thebettertoday.com, stevemaraboli.com, and Empowered Living Radio. Now go do something. You heard me. You're saying, Steve, you're on fire. Now go do something. Show me. Show everyone around you. Today's a new day. Folks, we'll see you next time.
A Better Today would like to thank you for listening to Empowered Living, Life, the Truth, and Being Free.